Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is Thanksgiving week. Don't forget, on Friday, Black Friday reveals some of my favorites that have never been revealed. And, you know, it's not generally the same number as a reveal day. It's probably 25, maybe? 20? 25? Because it's just the best of the best that haven't been revealed. Not any within the last 6 months, because those will be on New Year's Day, but everything else other than that is fair game. Anyway, a lot of good episodes to get to this week. I've got one that was going to be a basement blast, and now I can tell it's going to be a good solid hour, because I added on and added on and added on. Just found more stuff to talk about. And then the Stanley Kubrick episode is this week too, so finally gonna wrap that one up, and then at some point, probably towards the weekend, I will get started in all the Q&As. I noticed that there's about 350, which is a lot less than last time, so I think it'll be a lot fewer parts, which is a good thing. Anyway, when I was kind of... Oh, and thanks, by the way, part of one of the basement blast was going to be that somebody else found a pretty interesting piece of jewelry to talk about, so did a little digging on that, going to talk about that, and that led to some crazy African kind of secret cult. So it's just, it's amazing the things that you can find. And when I was doing that, so then I found this thing about the lead masks, and I had never heard of it, but when I was Googling all this other stuff and going down rabbit holes about diamonds and things like that, I just found this. And it happened in a little town just outside of Rio de Janeiro on August 20th, 1966. So you had these two Brazilian electronic technicians, a 32-year-old and a 34-year-old. You had Miguel and Manuel. And they were discovered dead on Vintem Hill under very mysterious circumstances. And the scene was puzzling and led to this great public intrigue that people are still talking about 54 years later. And it became known as the lead masks case. Now, both of these guys, these electronic technicians, they were dressed in business suits. And they had matching raincoats. And they were wearing thin face masks made of lead. Sounds like a really bad horror movie. And both men had been really heavily involved in UFO mystique. And in their pockets were cryptic messages and a diary. Of course, it's, you know, all in Portuguese, but when crudely translated, the last passage reads, 4:30 p.m., be at the specified location. 6:30 p.m., swallow capsules. After the effect, protect metals. Await signal mask. So, kind of sounds Heaven's Gate to me, in a way. Go commit suicide. You know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But the authorities were baffled by a series of odd findings connected to the men, and they weren't sure what to make of it. And it was really covered heavily by local media at first, you know, as it probably should be. But then the coverage stopped abruptly, and the public wanted updates. You know, you can't tell everybody, oh my gosh, this, and get everybody all wrapped up, and then all of a sudden just silence. I mean, they got total silence in return. So you had this 18-year-old, and apparently he was either flying a kite on the hill or he's hunting birds when he came across the two men laying on the ground. The story of what he was doing kind of changes report to report. You know, I'm trying to imagine an 18-year-old out flying a kite. Chances are he's probably hunting birds. But he thought that the men were sleeping, so he decided to leave them alone. And a few days later, he's back out there, and he smelled something awful and followed the smell, which led him back to the men's bodies. And then he ran down the hill and told his friends what he had discovered. And all of these, you know, boys, the friends, ran to the police station at the foot of the hill. Now, these two men were not local to the area, and there was no signs of trauma, nor anything to suggest what led to their demise. So, among their possessions, There was a diary, two hand towels, two water bottles, and a large sum of cash in a plastic bag. And there was a receipt for the water bottles in the pocket of one of the men's raincoats. And back then, if you purchased water, it was bottled in glass, and if you returned the empty bottle, you received a partial refund. So keeping the receipt, it suggested the men, you know, didn't expect to die. And the diary listed electrical part numbers and cryptic electronic formulas. And there were passages that indicated the men were taking capsules at lunchtime and at bedtime. And the final entry reveals the two men waited for an agreed signal before taking a capsule and waiting on its effects. And once the effects kicked in, they stood on the hill and put on a lead mask that protected only their eyes. You know, these face masks that, you know, they weren't goggles. They essentially rendered them completely blind, which is kind of odd. Now, were these drugs? I mean, were they meant to confuse them, make them forget what they saw if they survived? But they couldn't see anyway. And both men were described as hardworking family men who had small children and were known as good citizens in their communities. I mean, nobody had anything bad to say about them. Their families said the two electronic enthusiasts left for their trip at 9 a.m. on August 17th to travel to Rio de Janeiro to purchase electrical supplies and a used car. And the bus arrived in Rio de Janeiro around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And they shopped in town, purchased the two water bottles and also these two matching raincoats from a small shop just down at the bottom of the hill. And this shopkeeper, who rang them up at the bar, said that both men appeared to be extremely nervous and kept checking their watches. Now, use of a bar, I think in this case, you know, means like a place where you could get like, you know, soda pop or whatever, or those kind of things, like an old drugstore kind of thing. And not, you know, a bar that serves booze. And the men set off for their final destination of this hillside on foot. Now, the boy who found the body said that on August 17th, around 5 p.m., he saw the two men milling around the highest point of the hillside, talking to each other, before he saw them asleep 2 days later. So it was just two of them standing out there. I mean, this boy must have been there every single day. It was just the two of them. And it doesn't seem like anyone else walked up on them, because this boy saw them alone on the top of the hill. And no capsules were found at the scene, and their families had no idea what they could be. No toxicology was carried out because the coroner's office said they were extremely busy at the time. And the men's bodies laid in the morgue so long they further decomposed. It seems to me that this kind of mysterious death should maybe go to the front of the line, and somebody who had a heart attack or some other thing, maybe they could wait, because this is completely odd, and this would be something that the coroner would be, I got to do this one first. You know, we'll never, you know, by the time they could get to the bodies, the organs wouldn't have, you know, rendered a fair toxicology, so they didn't bother. And we'll never know what the pills were, because this already smells like a cover-up. If the pills were potassium iodide, which kind of protects from radiation, the dosage has to be built up and maintained for it to be effective. And that might explain why the men wore lead masks and took capsules at certain times every day. You know, someone seeking out electricians to conduct experiments makes sense. And they must have thought they were the best candidates and capable of making the masks and following instructions. You know, who were these men taking orders from? Who gave them the capsules? You know, all of this is unknown. You know, I can understand they needed the water bottles to either, you know, wash down the capsule, or even if they were going to be out there a while. But what were the hand towels for? You know, authorities reached out to other electricians who worked with the men and discovered the electricians were part of a secret society circle of self-identified scientific spiritualists who persuaded pseudo-scientific matters in search for greater truth in the universe. And the majority of the members of this secret society were electricians from the same local area as the male victims. They conducted, you know, bizarre home experiments related to space, pursued contact with alien life. And one electrician said the two victims had built a device in pursuit of their spiritualist interests to contact life on Mars. Upon testing the device, it failed and exploded in the garden. So after hearing the news, authorities searched the men's homes thoroughly to try and identify what the men were up to and if there was a possibility that other members would follow their example. I mean, if you have some kind of device that explodes in the garden, I think that you want to go search the house and look for other explosives. And in one of the men's workshops, they located scraps of lead and tools used to make the face masks. And there was a book called Scientific Spiritualism with highlighted passages that discussed intense luminosity and masks. The rest of the book had a bunch more coded messages and suggested it was linked to an occult society. The written portions were not in either of the victims' handwriting. The thing about the masks is that authorities investigated masks and shields. There was nothing like the thin lead masks the men were wearing. You know, no masks used in radiation experiments just covered the eyes. You know, masks for working in high radiation fields, they cover your whole head, the face, the neck. And then people in that field also wear goggles, you know, so they can see what they're doing. There is no environment in that field where blinding yourself is useful. The locals told authorities they wouldn't figure out the incident because it was supernatural. Authorities, you know, rejected the supernatural theory despite the other spiritual electricians claiming that three of their members had recently experienced a UFO incident only 2 months prior. Two of those three men were now dead. So it was known as the Atafona Beach UFO, and this was 2 months prior to their deaths, June 13th, 1966. So the two men had insisted that their colleague visit Atafona Beach with them. And the colleague said that after arriving to the beach, an intensely luminous object came down from the sky and hovered over them. Now, the friend wasn't prepared for it, but apparently the other two men were. So according to the surviving friend, the blinding bright light hovered for about 5 minutes. There was an explosion, and then it took off. Well, of course, you know, the cops wanted to know if this guy was telling the truth. So they interviewed fishermen who frequented the area to ask them if they saw anything over the beach that day. And the fishermen said, hey, yeah, it looked like a UFO crashed into the water and created an explosion that rocked them from miles away. They not only saw something, but they felt the impact. Whatever the blast was also resulted in damage to the nearby town, and that report had made the local newspapers. So there was something to this guy's story. Something really happened. There was minor damage to the town, similar to that of, say, a small earthquake. And the Brazilian Naval and Air Force Intelligence Services had no comment, and it's unknown if they investigated it or were connected to it. But, I mean, all of this information made the mysterious deaths more puzzling. So one of the sisters of one of the dead men said that her brother told her that he was going to carry out a top secret high priority mission in the coming days. He couldn't disclose what it was or who he was working for. There was no way to know if the man was connected to an authentic secret project or inventing a cover story for whatever the men were involved in with their spare time. And then adding another layer of mystery is this society matron who stepped forward claiming that on August 17th, she and her three children were in the car when they saw an oval-shaped UFO with an orange blaze around it. Senora Gracinda Barbosa, de Sousa's daughter, saw it first and told her, Mommy, look up, look up. And it hovered over the vicinity of the hillside at the same time the men died. She lived just below the mountain and was a well-known socialite of the town. I mean, this is somebody that respected, their opinion mattered. You know, they weren't out with some kind of outlandish theories. She said it had fire around the oval with orange rays coming out from all directions, and that there was one distinctive blue ray. Well, I mean, she pulls the car over and then further observed the UFO for 4 minutes, watching it rise and fall vertically before she fled to go get her husband. By the time the couple returned, the UFO had vanished, and the incident was confirmed by a large number of witnesses who called the police. And this little town, Niterói, was a wealthy area at the time. And some of the reports were made by doctors and pilots. I mean, these, again, like our society matron, Crescenta Barbosa de Souza, they were well-respected in the town. And a local newspaper reported at the time that the Souza family withheld further information that was kept private between them and the police. It's important to point out that during this time, people were afraid to report UFO sightings because it was strongly discouraged by the government. And when the newspaper published the reports by Senora Souza, people felt that if someone of her status was willing to come forward, it gave the rest of them courage. That's when they started telling the press and the public what they had seen going on in the area. The crazy thing is, this is even more crazy, is these two men weren't the only ones in Brazil to turn up dead wearing lead face masks. In 1962, so 4 years earlier, a man named Hermes Luiz Feltosa was found on a hill wearing one. It wasn't the same hill, but he too was an electrical repairman. So this wasn't, you know, a case of, you know, madness for two, whatever that French term is, I can't remember, folie à deux, something like that. These men were reading from some type of playbook. Hermes was attempting to harness his psychic abilities to pick up radio and television signals. Now, it was never determined what killed him or the other two men. And back then, if the coroner was unsure, they would just make a hypothesis. So, you know, I mean, the cause of death could be, you know, hypothetically heart failure or natural causes. You know, I would think overdose couldn't be ruled out since we don't know what any of the men took. The autopsy was conveniently evaded. No crime or funny business could ever be detected. And the capsule circulating, you know, amongst this group might have been iodine, maybe hallucinogenics, administered to make these people compliant. I mean, people can be coerced into doing weird things. I mean, just look at TikTok or kids eating Tide Pods. One of the theories is that the men were protecting themselves from radiation and standing on hills waiting to receive it. But who was showering them with radiation? And why would anyone agree to stand under it, expecting a thin lead mask to protect them? But what about the rest of their body? I mean, the men thought enough of themselves to purchase raincoats to protect them from the rain. If they had gone to the hill to die, would they have cared if they were wet? If the men were used in an experiment, I mean, it went wrong. And, you know, you have to wonder if the person who gave them the instructions told them to wear their funeral outfits, you know, just in case. I mean, it's formal wear in the pouring rain. I also wonder if whoever was involved picked a rainy day on purpose, a day when they thought people were less likely to be outside to see anything. And maybe it washed, you know, the evidence away. Years after the incident, grass was reluctant to grow on the hill where the men were found. And some people believe the men were led to the hill for the purpose of the robbery, because some of the money they traveled with went missing. Could have been the boys, you know. The families believe the two men carried a certain amount of cash on them, and it came up short at the scene. Anyone, though, could have taken the money after arriving to the scene. It may not have went missing prior. I mean, there's always corrupt people. But the robbery theory doesn't really explain why the men needed lead masks or how they mysteriously died from something that couldn't be detected. there was no visible trauma to suggest they engaged in conflict with a third party. You know, and a robber would have taken all the money, not just some of it. Then you had the witness on the hill, the boy who saw the men talking to each other with no third party mentioned. It just seems, you know, like a less likely theory. Now, one of the men's widows faced legal problems related to supposed false statements she made in the case. She was the one who told authorities about the society group of scientific spiritualists. It is suggested that the family was scared into silence because the cousin had begun telling the press that the men didn't travel to buy anything, that it was an excuse, and they were really going to test their spiritual beliefs, so they weren't really going to buy a car. If the family feared facing further legal action, they were less likely to continue speaking. But then it kind of leads me to ask, what were the local authorities hiding? Why did they begin giving conflicting interviews to the newspapers? At first, they were satisfied that the deaths were natural and assumed it was a suicide pact or misadventure. I mean, I think if I was a police officer and saw that situation, I would probably think it was a suicide pact too. Or they took these capsules or something and, you know, went horribly wrong, but that's why you need an autopsy and a toxicology. Later, they claimed, the police were looking for a car with a certain registration number because the car may have transported the bodies to the hill. But that's crazy because the boy, the one who witnessed it, had already told everyone that he saw the men alive, talking on the hill, prior to their demise. They weren't transported dead. The authorities were backtracking and not making much sense. Now, on August 26th, the Ultima Hora newspaper announced the bodies were being exhumed for further testing. And the local police claimed that important pieces of evidence were disregarded at the start of the inquiry, and that his team was now close to solving the case and would arrest a guilty party in just a few days. And it was stated further that the arrest would come from this scientific spiritual circle. So then, of course, the newspapers then went on to redo the entire story, stating that the men didn't die until August 21st, which made absolutely no sense. You know, here they began muddying the water and confusing people. August 21st would be after the bodies were discovered. I mean, they were just kind of overwriting facts at this point. You know, either they were trying to sell more newspapers with sensationalism or aiding someone in a cover-up. No guilty party was ever arrested, and nothing more was printed about the case after that day. Nothing. Just nobody's interested in it anymore? Now, one man from the criminal underworld confessed to being involved in killing the men. When he said that he took their briefcase of money, it didn't make sense because the men had their money in a plastic bag. And the shop attendant they purchased their mineral water from hadn't seen them with a briefcase. It just appeared to be a false confession by someone wanting to link himself to something larger for clout. Another witness, and I put that in quotes, from the town, told a newspaper that when police were holding back in the case were that the men were also carrying crushed pieces of aluminized blue and white paper, cellophane soaked in a chemical substance, and a handkerchief with the initials AMS. Now, nothing else was ever mentioned about this specific witness or the items. I mean, that's, you know, chemical substance or whatever would be interesting. So why all of the cover-ups? You know, because Brazil began efforts to develop their nuclear program in the 1950s, and there were a lot of countries in a nuclear arms race. And by the 60s, whatever they had developed may have reached fruition, and they needed to conduct experiments. Perhaps the men are linked to that, and that's why they weren't allowed to see anything and forced to wear blind masks. It also might explain why the media, you know, changed the story, diverted the story, before abruptly ceasing reporting on it altogether. A radiation test of the hillside was allegedly conducted, but authorities claimed it rendered no useful results. Their explanation for the grass not growing was that they had sprinkled formalin around the bodies to hide the smell, therefore contaminating the soil. And the local said the smell wasn't bad enough to warrant sprinkling anything around. If you weren't up on the hill looking for them, you didn't smell it. And if the deaths were linked to the nuclear race, authorities would, you know, not pursue solving it. Those kind of stories get quietly tucked away. There's this astronomer and UFOologist Jacques Vallée, and he studied the case for years. And he says that belief in extraterrestrials is an attractive vehicle for some mind control and psychological warfare activities. The most plausible theory to me is, you know, these men were conned into believing they belonged to a scientific society when in reality they were hired up for experimental tests. You know, I wonder how many other men fell prey and were never discovered. But in the meantime, it's a pretty great mystery.